Welcome, beautiful you, to Girl on Her Moon, the podcast. My name is Jordan, and I invite you to join us as we connect, share our experience, and become one for a moment. From topics like self-worth, creativity, expression, intuition, and soul, to astrology, numerology, tarot, energetics, and more. And then the topics that are undefinable and ungraspable. Exploring what it means to be alive, to be rooted in both our divinity and humanness, and returning to the space where they are one. Thank you for being on this journey with us. Hello, lovely. Welcome to a conversation that I enjoyed immensely. I hope that it holds value, support, and insight for you on your journey. I wanted to pop in before this aired as today, we have released our April offerings inside of our Flow with the Moon membership. And this includes the workshop that Sarah and I are referring to throughout this conversation. Whether I call it a workshop, a healing, or a sacred space, it was so deeply impactful to journey through, and I cannot wait for each member to receive it. April is our entrance to the first eclipse season of the year. This month, we have an Aries new moon solar eclipse that acts as this second gateway into a new beginning that was initiated last month with our first Aries new moon. Of course, this time though, we have the extra added spark of alignment, initiation, and purpose with those eclipse energies. For this solar eclipse, we've created a soul journey titled Unfolding with Destiny, and I'm really excited to offer it to you all. So we have Sarah's healing, the balancing the scales of the heart for the Libra full moon, and our journey unfolding with destiny for the Aries solar eclipse. And then in addition to these two offerings, we have our astrology class of the month, which is a deep dive into the zodiacs. So on the 8th of April, we're meeting live for 2 hours to dive into each zodiac and really get to know these archetypes with an intimacy and depth like never before. So I would love to invite you into our Flow the Moon membership. I would love to see you live on the 8th of April. I would love to offer you both Sarah's healing and the Unfolding with Destiny journey. I will pop the link to our membership below, whether you want to learn astrology, whether you want to engage in different healing modalities, or maybe you want to have a sacred and safe space of inner reflection and discovery. I invite you to take a moment to explore whether this creation feels as if it could support you, feels as if it could offer you nurturing on your journey or somehow provide value for where you are in your life. I really enjoyed today's episode. It was honestly just fun. It was really fun to record. And so I hope that is felt and I hope you enjoy. Hello, Sarah. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Yay. How are you feeling? We were talking a little bit before we started recording about this trying to be as playful, not even trying, just this being as playful as possible. So how are you feeling entering into this conversation? What's happening?
Well, it's interesting because just before this session, I've had my mum staying with me for just a night. It's her birthday this week. But it was interesting, obviously, having done the session that I've shared with you and then going into the catch-up with mum, definitely noticing some shifts and some changes in how I hold myself. And I think that authenticity as well and the playfulness of just, you know, I find that when we're really in our own authentic energy, that sense of play does come from a very natural and effortless space, much like when we were kids, like there can just be this spark of enjoyment rather than, I think as adults, and I definitely know I've done this sometimes where it's like, I need to play. And then when you come in with this like seriousness to it, I was like, it never ends up being playful. It ends up being like, just what it is, but it's not play, whereas that play can happen in any moment in any interaction when I think everyone's in their heart centers as well. Mm. And it's just that natural flow where people aren't worrying about being awkward or having to put on a mask or a facade. Yeah, play just organically comes from that space.
I love this because something that I have noticed is when we've spoken like in this way, so online, or even just via emails, I feel a sense of playfulness in you.
Yeah.
And I think that's just, it's such a beautiful thing. And I was curious, is that something that has always been natural to you or something that you've had to cultivate and or something that you've had to allow the space to bring back into your life?
I've definitely, look, as from what I can remember from childhood, because obviously when we reflect back on childhood, it's like I'm remembering things and I'm also remembering things that other people told me.
Yeah.
I feel like I have always had a joyful spirit and joy is part of my authenticity. Through my 20s, that joy was expressed by partying lots. And I've been reflecting on this because I've been doing some healing work around it as well. You know, as much as I was pretty disassociated and binge drinking and doing all of the things, there also was moments where I had a really good time. There was a lot of joy and connection and community and the joy was there. But then I stepped into my 30s and there was like this seriousness came in where it's like, I have to be this like serious holistic practitioner. I need to stop partying and binge drinking and all of the things. And even though I was aware of it, I was like, it wasn't that I took a righteous path. Like I think I kind of would get the knocks of humility anytime that real righteousness came in. But I did. I lost the joy. I lost the joyous spirit. And it would come in snippets and it would come. Like I'm sure most a lot of the people that I work with would say that it was always there. But I think would judge it slightly when I was facilitating a group or if I was in session, I would enjoy the humor and the joy and think, oh no, I've got to be like serious. And I've got some amazing teachers and incredible friends that are like, they are like wicked shadow walkers. Like they've just like one friend, she's like got the obsidian spirit in her. So they're just very powerful, very deep people. And I love spending time with them, but I did notice I'd gone into a little bit of comparison of, oh, when I facilitate, I need to facilitate more like this, or my work's got to be like really transformative and like disruptive. And then everyone's in this huge process after. And I'm like, yay, we've done the deep work. And it's like, then things started happening and I started reflecting where I was like, I don't know that this is my way. And I don't actually know that it's the best way. At different times I think that type of healing work is great. And then I really started to reweave gentleness back in.
Yeah.
And then started noticing people have actually much more profound and lasting shifts taking place when joy was the anchor. And then I found myself coming out of the cycle of always healing. So I was like, oh my God, I'm always healing and I'm not actually living my life. And like the reason why I started doing healing work in the first place, I was like, why am I, you know, I've forgotten the very thing that was the inspiration to want to have a better life and to heal and grow so that I could cultivate more joy. And I'm really delighted that over the last 6, 9, 12 months, that joy is really sparking back in. But rather than pushing it down and being like, oh, this is childish, or tone it down, don't be so bright. Like, no, this is actually part of who I am. And people, whoever, as we know, will find me when there's a resonance or there's a resonance of alchemy between us. And those that I'm not for, you know, I'm not for them, and that's totally okay. And obviously this goes far beyond actually in interactions with doing healing work with people. This is just in my life in general. Yeah. But really wanting to focus on the joy, making sure that I'm, you know, committing to things in my life that do bring me joy, that I'm surrounded by people that are actually joyful is a big thing for me too, because there's, you know, there's lots of people that aren't joyful and that's okay because that's where they're at. But for me, it's really important to be surrounded by those people where that is just part of who they naturally are, because then when you come together, there's just this, yeah, this brightness and this radiance and fun that can be cultivated. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you touched on something really cool, which is like, it's so easy to just be like, look at healing from such a serious, like I got to put my suit on and like get ready and like go do the deep stuff. But like, there is so much for me anyway, in my experience, when I can laugh at myself, like at how ridiculous I'm being and that to me is so much more healing and nourishing for my experience and for my body. And you mentioned the gentleness that you bring into your work, and that's something that I really, really, really appreciated in the session that you created for our membership. How you mentioned that, I think you alluded to, like, when we shouldn't really be trying to just push something for the sake of healing. And kind of blow ourselves out. Like, this can be gentle. This can be in our own time. We can refer to that inner wisdom as to how much we can open and shift and bring in each moment. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah. And that's something that's obviously from personal experience. I became aware that there's parts of us that will not respond to the pushing. They'll just burrow even deeper within ourselves, or it's like, you know, I've got a quite rebellious spirit. So if that part of me that's like quite controlling comes in where it's like, you will do this, you will do this healing work, there are parts of me that are just like, no way, or yeah, stubbornly going to dig in. And then there's these really, really vulnerable parts that are just like, that's way, way too harsh. Mm-hmm. And I've had two beautiful teachers over the last 5-6 years that have been really significant for me. Sharon Bolt and Kenneth Hover, and I think you know Ken as well, and particularly Ken also teaches and leads with joy and gentleness and sweetness. And so he was just this breath of fresh air that came in at exactly the right moment where I was getting a bit sticky in like the heavy hardcore work. And his approach of let's do this sweetly, I was like, oh my God, my body, my soul knows this. This feels in resonance for me. And I've been doing soul healing work with Sharon recently, because she's created this beautiful modality called Soul Constellations. And one of the things of that that's been really interesting is the soul really wants gentleness.
Yeah.
Because you think of how harsh and how hard it can be being a human on this planet at this time. And for many of us, obviously, depending on people's belief systems, we've had many incarnations and lifetimes that have been like hugely traumatic and not gentle. So to actually bring in the gentleness and the sweetness is quite revolutionary.
Mm-hmm. And I think it requires a bit of a shift in perspective, like a deeper trust that you don't need to be anywhere other than where you are. I think the times where I've been really serious with different healers and teachers and whatnot, it's because I'm not accepting my current state, my current self, my current reality.
Yep.
I'm looking over there and going, but I need to be over there, so I need to push myself to be over there now.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been in group situations, in group healing spaces, and people have been having like these huge kind of wild cathartic releases. And I know that in those moments when I reflect back, there was part of me that was like, oh, I should be healing like them. But for me, it was going home and having a bath and then having like just tears coming, but not even needing to have this huge, strong cathartic release. I mean, I've definitely had them over the times, but wasn't necessary. And I think, you know, there's lots of healing practices out there that really follow that warrior's path. Where you get in there, and sometimes that is necessary. Like sometimes we need that discipline and that force and that like full power, but to balance it out and then to step into the gentleness and the joy, I really think is like the next step, because I see lots of people similar to where I was really stuck in that like hardcore healing cycle, and I'm like, they're miserable.
Yeah.
Miserable.
It's like you said, like you said earlier, you're able to return to the place where the intention for the healing in the first place was able to shine, which was to have more joy, to have more fulfillment, to be more engaged in reality and in life. Like, what's the point of the healing if it's not for joy and for love?
Yeah. And look, I think there can be lots of fancy techniques and tools out there as well. And I, again, this is something that I see where we might get attached to the tool and technique, and everything I speak to from personal experience. So this isn't any judgment. It's more of a reflection. Yeah. But if we go in hard and heavy because we've got like this, I don't know, like chainsaw where it's like, we've got this amazing technique to really get in there. But if the person's not feeling safe and resourced, they're just not even going to respond to that. Mm-hmm. And we run the risk of re-traumatizing people or putting them into even deeper states of disassociation. So the first step is always like, how is this person feeling safe? Am I feeling safe? Because if that's not there as a basic anchor, nothing's actually going to be lasting. There might be a chaotic response where we feel like all of these things are happening and then pop back into our everyday life and it's just like nothing's happened.
Mm. Yeah. I wanted to give a little bit of space because I realized we just jumped into things, but for those listening that don't know you yet, what would you like to share about yourself and your work?
I have been I always find it really hard to put labels around what I do. So I like to also keep it really grounded and relatable as well. I've been a holistic practitioner, an energy worker and space holder for about 14 years now, which is quite wild to me.
That's amazing.
But I love it. And I started out teaching meditation classes, which very quickly turned into circles, which very quickly were aligned with the moon cycles. And so when I look back, I just see the alignment of everything, which brings a lot of warmth into my heart. So I started more so with group work and then went into one-on-one sessions. I learned Reiki, loved Reiki, taught Reiki for over a decade.
Wow.
And then also the circle work that I did started to evolve into running ceremonies. And then things started happening in my space that were, I guess, my perception of energy and spirits, which brought into question things where I'm like, am I holding a really safe space for people? Like I just started noticing like, you know, dodgy beings in the space and different things going on where I was like, oh God, what is this? And then realized, you know what, I actually need training specifically on ceremony. Mm-hmm. And this was when my teacher Sharon Bolt came in and she's created a lineage under the Shamanic Energy Training School called the White Dragon Lineage. And so I've been training with her, learning about ceremonial art, space holding, lots and lots of different things, working in right relationship with spirit. And she's helped me to really seed more of an animistic consciousness back into my field. I mean, we all come from ancestors that lived in animistic ways. So for those that aren't sure what animism is, it's recognizing the spirit in all things and being in right relationship with all things. But there's a huge ego death that needs to happen with that shift of consciousness, because we need to come out of the Western mindset and that can be really rough. And so that's where I was really grateful to have Sharon and also Ken to help me on that path, which of course then's shifted all of the work that I do. And so part of the reason why I stopped teaching Reiki, even though I loved it and I've got so much gratitude for it and for the lineage of Reiki, is that I did a journey and my ancestors came through and they're like, you actually need to choose. Are you going to keep teaching Reiki, which is fine, we'll support you, but you actually need to go to Japan, visit the temples, do offerings there to come into greater relationship with that lineage, or we've got all this stuff we need to bring through, but you need space. And so it was, just before all of everything happened in 2020. So I had felt from like 2018 that message had dropped through, but I needed to go through a big unraveling because so much of my identity as a facilitator was I've built this beautiful community teaching Reiki. Am I abandoning my students? Like all of this stuff. And then the world changed and was so much of that was taken out of my hands because with the lineage that I used to teach in Reiki, you always had to do the transmissions in person, which I absolutely respect, but I literally couldn't teach over that time.
Yeah.
And I was like, you've got the space. My ancestors are like, you've got the space now. And with the help of Sharon and Ken, more of, I guess, my authentic work has started to come through, which is beautifully, and this is always the way, isn't it? A mix of everything that I'd ever done in terms of energy work, energy healing, I love working with plants and plant spirits because they're so close to humans and can be so supportive for the nervous system and engage that childlike spirit and wonder, but in a really beautiful, grounded and supportive way. And weaving in those spaces, particularly with women, but obviously I work with all different people and folks, and helping and supporting people through rites of passage, whether or not that's in group ceremonies, one-on-one sessions. And I've created different containers that are themed around different journeys, but I like to keep them quite precise. So there's one called Lover, which is working in with the consciousness of love, like love and its vast self, which is quite connected to the process that I've done for the membership. There's one that I've created with Lotus, which is all about connecting into the soul and inner wisdom. There's one with hibiscus and the bees because I'm quite strong and there's been a lot of ancestral memory of bee lineages, and that container is called Embody, and it's about coming home to the body and starting to cultivate a loving relationship with earth. And then there's others and they'll just continue kind of like bubbling and simmering in the background and will birth over time, but it's been really liberating being able to kind of come out of different lineages, constructs and modalities that are great and beautiful but just weren't right for me anymore, so that I could weave in just a slightly different way whilst also being under guidance and mentoring with Ken and Sharon. I mean, they've both got different approaches, but it's so good to be creating something, take it to someone whose opinion I really trust and value and be like, am I just making this up? Like, is this valid? Is it going to be good? Am I in right relationship? Is my ego getting out of control? And all of those things, because Sharon in particular has really taught me that, you know, this work and walking this path does require mentoring and supervision along the way when you are a facilitator.
Yeah.
Because it can be very easy for that sneaky spiritual ego to come in and take over. And all of, I guess, the temptations of making money with this work that always just feels so weird and clunky to me. But that's when we can, you know, start making decisions that perhaps aren't in integrity. And if there's not someone coming in and checking in, as triggered as I get sometimes when Sharon's like, oi, what part of you is coming out now? I'm like, no, I don't need you to tell me what to do. So bless her. She's also been very patient with me. But I am who I am now. My work is what it is now because of the love that I have from the teachers and mentors in my life. And I'm deeply grateful for them and all the teachers that I've had over my life. I wouldn't even be doing this work if it wasn't for my first meditation teacher, Diane Collette, who's a beautiful friend of mine now. She literally pushed me like constantly was like, come on, when are you going to do it? You're going to do it. You're going to do it. And I just wouldn't have done it. I would have stayed working in corporate, I think, and been miserable.
What was that transition like for you exiting corporate world and into being a meditation teacher? Is that what you
said? Yeah. Look, for many, many years, I was moonlighting. So I was working corporate by day, running classes and doing one-on-one sessions at night with people. And that was the best way for me and the best way for my nervous system as well.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, be smart about it. I was like, I need to have money there because I know and knew and recognized that if I was doing it for money, I mean, it's the quickest way, isn't it? If we're desperate for something to push that very thing that we want away.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see that with some of the people that I mentor where they're like, why am I getting clients and students? I'm like, because there's too much monetary pressure on it. And if people feel like they're just there because they're giving you money, it's just not the right alignment. So I took a good 5 to 7 years to transition. And I hope that just brings in some, like, if there's anyone listening that's in that space, I hated it along the way. I definitely had tantrums where I was like, I want to be in my business full time. Like, it's not the quiet time. And so I just gently transitioned from full time to part time, 4 days a week to 3 days a week, to them being like, nah, I've built up enough of a community now. There's enough people that are coming in kind of a balanced momentum that I can drop the corporate work now. And I was really grateful, actually. I used to work as a marketing manager that to start When I came out of uni, I worked for Coles Myer when it was Coles Myer, which for those international listeners listening, this is like a big like retail, huge corporation, and then left there and then started working in small businesses and could see the initiation actually of that, that then really helped me to prepare for running a small business, because there's doing the work and then there's running a business and they're different skill sets.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much that goes on in the background that I never even know how to like name what it is. I'm like, there's always just stuff. Like there's lots of stuff. Yeah.
And I look, I still struggle with it sometimes to switch it off, because that stream of like, oh, I've got to do this, I've got to do this, this has got to happen, is constantly kind of humming in the background.
No, I'm really glad that you mentioned the spaciousness that you took with that transition though, because it's, while it's not an experience that I've had too much myself, but I do see it elsewhere, the pressure to just jump in, to make it happen, to do the thing and, you know, take the chance and you'll be rewarded like straight away.
Yeah.
And I just think about how much pressure that adds to both the self and the business that's being birthed. And, you know, we were talking about play and joy earlier, and that kind of stifles that a bit.
Oh,
and
my
then
God,
that 100%. Flow isn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I appreciate that.
When I look back, when I was the years of the early days of building the business, that was when the joy left, because I was literally like, life was all about building this business. I'm really grateful for that effort and that sacrifice, but it did require sacrifice. Like there were things that I had to choose. You're going to do this or that, this or that, investing in training and experience. And I think in a culture which is very much driven about the quick fix and the quick training, and that was something I even struggled with. I was grateful that my Reiki lineage, when we did mastership, it was over a 12 and 18 month journey, more like an apprenticeship where you would learn one-on-one. Because there's obviously like you can go off and become a Reiki teacher in a like weekend or find your attunement. I think even for free, someone was showing me the other day. And I was like, so you've got the title, but you've got no, nothing of substance behind it. And even when, you know, reflecting on Mikao Usui's path, because there's so much misinformation about him and what he did, and a bit of like a myth story around how he even came to find Reiki, he was training in temples for years before he had his ego death spiritual awakening experience. There was training and tutelage and hours of practice. He was also a Qigong master. So there was so many other things that were going on there to then be like, da-da, I've like had this awakening. Whereas I think sometimes people can have very rapid awakenings, and I do definitely respect that. But then to be like, I had this awakening experience, so now I'm going to be able to teach people, again, that's different skill sets. Just because someone's tuned in a channel doesn't necessarily mean they're a good teacher. Yeah. Yeah,
I appreciate that. And something that I was thinking yesterday when I journeyed through the healing, I don't even know what to call it, the process, the healing that you created for our membership yesterday. And after all of the tears and the laughter and all of the emotions and the memories and all the things, I just emerged in awe that I get to speak to you the next day, because I was so curious about your process with creating a space, whether it's for yourself or for another.
Yep.
Like, what is that process like for you? What was the process like of creating this?
Yeah, well, this process was actually really fun for me, because when you reached out and we started tuning into the full moon that it was for, it was like the name of the process, balancing the scales of the heart, like literally just dropped through instantly. And I was like, whoa. And that's actually when I kind of know that I'm in a good alignment, because I know I'm not making it up, because I'm like, even if I sat down and tried to make that up, I wouldn't have been able to. So you're just in that beautiful flow of surrender. And then, look, little parts of it kept dropping through, and then I was getting really excited and wanting to add like all of these things in. And then just before I sat down, I got told, it was like, you need to plan none of this. You need to be in the flow. You need to drop into your own heart, work with the actual energy of the group. So I do this process where I kind of called in everyone that will ever watch the recording across time. and tuned into their inner wisdom. So it's like I'm just mirroring and working with what that group actually needs. And so that's the same process if I'm working with someone individually or group. And when I do ceremony, it's the same thing. Like that ceremony can sometimes be like years in the making where there's a weaving and then it all lands together, which is then why things can ripple for years after the fact as well. I mean, and I love that. That's when I was like, oh my God, this is like magic, because it's not me. Like there's something that I'm tuning into that is greater than me that I've had to learn how to trust. And that's gone through. I think that's more what's taken the time of cultivating a relationship with my own heart, cultivating a really solid relationship with my own ancestors and spirit teams. Obviously learned some incredible things from Sharon and Ken and all the teachers that I've had. So there is, I guess, a toolkit of things that I can call on when I intuitively feel drawn. But the most important thing for me always is what's happening in the energy of this space and how can I respond to it, like a bit like a conductor, where it's a fine balance between someone needs to be directing what's going on in this space, but I also then don't want to imprint and take over it too much, because there is an alchemy when a group comes together that there's a natural growth that's going to take place. And so that was where that all flowed from, which I love, because I actually had no idea where that was going to end up. And I on a personal level was terrified, because I was like, you know, you've reached out to me. I want to honor the relationship and doing this thing and it being beneficial for people. But oh my God, I'm like showing up and I don't even know what I'm going to like tune into yet. So yeah, that muscle has become greater, but it's still, there's always a moment where I'm like, oh my gosh.
I'm so glad that you're saying this, because I get so freaking nervous, like even before things like this, especially when I mentioned to you earlier, when there isn't a lot coming through in terms of preparation. I tried to prepare for this multiple times. It was just a few days ago and I was like, I don't even know what we're going to talk about.
Yep.
And I'm like, am I being reckless? Am I just not organized enough? I think it was just, first of all, it's that playfulness and letting that, like creating the space for that, but just trusting. And so I really appreciate that you're mentioning you still get nervous about things, because I'm like, oh, it's just me, like get over it, bloody hell.
No, not at all. Definitely not. And I think it's just this beautiful art of rebuilding trust with the mystery.
And
we're good at kids, like when we're really little, I think, before obviously the world comes in and we start changing. But you watch, like I've got two twin nephews that I absolutely love and you just see it in them, like their divinity, their light, their play. Like they're not thinking about, I'm going to go do this thing and I've got to write a list of planets, and, you know, all of that. It's just there and it flows. And yeah, look, I think doing for anyone that's struggling with this, definitely looking at how you were in school and the templates that the school systems place in, because it's a very particular energy. What has been the industrial age of wanting good little workers that will work 9 to 5, that will sit at their desks and really leans into that energy of structure and planning. And there's got a place for that, of course. Yeah. But then when we start engaging more with the mystery and the creativity and soul, it's all of the things that we were kind of shut down at school. And I'm sure I was thinking about this actually after the process that we did. I was like, these memories started to come in when that was shut down. Like even in art class, even in like, I remember a sculpture class making something with clay, because I love working with clay because it's so grounding and earthing. Whether or not that turns into an object or not, I don't care. Like I just like massaging the clay. But I remember the teacher being like, no, you've got to structure this thing and this thing and this thing. And even with art and painting, like there were certain people's paintings that would get more accolades, and it's like, who can even come in and measure that? Like we're measuring souls, and every soul's journey is so unique. So there's a big unraveling of all of that, as well as just being like, yeah, just show up and do the thing and surrender to the mystery. It's definitely easier said than done sometimes.
So some of the ways that you do this is one through clay work. Is there anything else that's really easily accessible that we can begin to step into in a way that is, it's already a safe space and container to explore that mystery?
Definitely. I love dance. So you can blindfold yourself because sometimes this is really good, like doing with your eyes closed. So it's more about you somatically feeling your body, putting on music that you enjoy that either does bring joy or elicits an emotional reaction or just has maybe got like a really awesome beat or whatever it is. And just invite your soul to dance and move through your body and just see what comes up. I also enjoy like free flow writing, like writing nonstop for 10 minutes and I'm connecting to myself and connecting to my own soul, but just seeing what comes through. And it was a process that I used to teach when I was teaching Reiki too, is doing 10 minutes of automatic flow writing every single day. And by constant flow, it's like setting a timer on your phone for 10 minutes and writing nonstop. And you will reach a point of threshold where you'll notice where your logic and rational mind is like describing the things, asking the questions. And then there's almost like this point of tension where you cross over from the logic and into the intuitive and you start going through a bit of a question and an answer session with yourself. Or you might just purge out all of the emotion, like I'm angry, mm-hmm. I'm sad, or you'll be like psychotically looping in this thing of something. And then when you look back on it, you can see like, okay, this is where my mind is at. This is when I was in my heart. And with practice of showing up every day and doing that, it helps to cultivate that sense of trust where mm-hmm. you can just let go and to stop grabbing it or judging it or stopping the flow of it.
Mm. And yes. Even just identifying the differences between.
Yeah.
Them. Yeah. I can definitely feel the difference.
Yeah. And knowing that the more structured aspect and the more logic and rational, it's welcome as well. So we don't have to judge that part of ourselves. And any part that's got that grip that's wanting to control is also connected to our comfort zone, our survival mode, and the fear that's within us that's like, this feels safe. If I open this up, this is starting to feel unsafe, which looping it back to where we started, this is where play is really powerful. Because if we're playing and we're not thinking about it, that flow can really happen.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking one of the intentions that I had for not just this podcast episode but the podcast as a whole, or one of the keywords I should say, was exploration.
Yeah.
Because it's like for me, you can't explore something in a wrong way. For me, exploring doesn't have like a – There aren't any outcomes that I'm attached to.
Yeah.
It's just open. It's free. It's playful. There's no right or wrong. I can just explore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what magic that is, that's when we discover new things, things that we like and love, things that or meet people that you're just like, oh my gosh, I wouldn't have even met this person or done this thing or experienced this thing if I hadn't just been curious and exploratory. I mean, at least from speaking to clients and friends as well, travel can be another thing and traveling with no specific destination. So, you know, you might have like, I'm arriving here and I'm leaving here, but leaving space for the mystery to weave and just seeing where you end up or where your attention's drawn and being out of your familiar life can really bring in the magic as well. It tends to be the really playful, fun things are the things that are going to bring us out of the stagnancy and the seriousness and the control, because as we know, if there's too much of that control energy, things stagnate and start to die.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned when you are creating the space for others, you're able to tune into their inner wisdom and what they're requiring in that moment. It's like this faster guidance that you're being moved through.
Mm.
Have you always felt this connection to subtlety or to energy or had that sensitivity, or is that something that's been cultivated or both?
Definitely cultivated. I was pretty dense for quite a while there. I was pretty in my head there for a long time. I was pretty disassociated for large chunks of childhood and teenagehood, and definitely in my 20s when I was partying so much. I mean, I loved the escape, like that was getting out of my body. So it has been in my 30s, there's been a return into my body, and the deeper that I'm connected with my body, the more that I can perceive subtleties.
Mm.
because it requires my body as a tuning fork and a felt sense to really discern, oh, what is that? Like, what is the nuance of that that I'm feeling and sensing? And it's interesting, obviously, when we're working with others, we be a group or an individual, as a facilitator, that requires me to be the hollow bone. So I have got to get out of the way. I feel like that's something that I was already probably pretty good at, because I was very good as a child and a teenager of getting out of the way, putting on a mask and really being quite malleable. I was a chronic people pleaser. So I was very good at going, what does this group need? I can show up and attune to this or be this or do this.
Yeah.
And so that was a skill that's actually great as a practitioner. To have that nuance and understanding to be able to attune to what the group and what the individual's needing. And then the work for me is then when the sessions close down of what can I do to come back into myself and fill myself back up.
Mm.
Yeah.
That gives me hope, because that is also a very fine skill that I have.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. I wanted to ask you about the name of your business.
Yes.
Because it feels like it's very specifically chosen.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Definitely. When I was looking for business names, I had all these other names that none of them felt right, and most of them were kind of like lots of the things that you already see around. But one night when I fell asleep, I was like, please just show me what is the name of my business. And I was literally woken up in the middle of the night with the name, The Space in Between. And I was like, oh, okay. All right, there we go. That makes a lot of sense. And then over the years, it's literally been like the perfect container of the different evolutions and reiterations, because my work has changed over the years. But one thing that has always seemed to align is that I often, and I think it's normal with this type of work as well, but I often will attract people that are moving through transition. They're going through an identity shift. They're going through a rite of passage. Something's happened in their life where they're questioning, seeking, and wanting to grow and change, and they're needing that helper or that like midwife energy to go, it's safe to let this go and to step into this. And there's obviously many different shades and variations and depths to what happens with that change. I do a lot of womb work with women as well, and so the space in between just feels like the womb for me as well. Mm-hmm. So it is like entering into the mystery and entering into something beyond what has been known to then weave and allow yourself to be weaved into the next iteration of who you're kind of blossoming and becoming.
I love that you just brought that up, because I've been really curious about, you have an offering called Womb Weaving.
Yes.
And I, like, without understanding what that is, it just feels so like enticing.
I think, and because you've got a womb as well, there's like an ancestral remembrance to that. And look, men as well, I will work with, because men have got a womb center as well. It's called their hara and their creative center. So it's also the sacral energy that we're talking about when we talk about wombs. So it's not necessarily specific to gender, but working with people that have wombs and women, there's a magic and an alchemy, because there's, you know, we can birth and create life, and not just birth babies, but anything that is birthed in life is first cultivated in the womb space and birthed in the darkness before it then comes out into the light. So for women in particular, many of us come from lineages where the energetic womb has been closed because of trauma, because of disconnection from the land, because of all of the things, war, everything that's happened for our ancestors, and also the desecration of the feminine and people not being allowed to practice the indigenous arts where they're in communion with the womb and with the earth. And so when we start, I find that women find womb work when they're ready, and they tend to have already been on a bit of a journey. Like, they might have done a lot of mindset work, a lot of heart work, and then there's something that initiates them, or there's an interest of, okay, now I'm actually ready to drop into the womb, because the womb carries a record of, you know, all of our life's experiences, our ancestral experiences, past life experiences, and it is our creative cauldron. But if the womb's holding on to old energy, whatever's sitting in the womb is what we create from. So if we're stuck in cycles that we can't seem to break out of, if we're having trouble birthing and creating things, or if we're really ready to birth our authentic self, that's when there tends to be an initiation into the womb work. We have our physical womb and then we have our energetic womb, which is more like a metaphysical, multidimensional womb. And again, if we haven't done work, it's very, very common, particularly for those of us that have been chronic people pleasers, that we might be carrying other people's energy in our womb or spiritual energies in our womb that then will, you know, they might not be causing any issues, but when it comes to going, I want to make a change and I want to birth something new, then that can be an issue because we're holding on to other people's energy. So if I'm doing womb clearing work with people, often what we'll really be going into is clearing inauthentic energies out of the womb. So other people's energies, old like collective programs, things like kind of entities and shadow beings and just anything that might be harvesting that woman's energy, clear it out. And then there's always this beautiful shift because when a woman's really in her womb, she's in her power. She easily can set boundaries. She knows who she is. And you can feel that with certain people. Like I can feel when they're in their womb because there's a drop that there is where you were less in the mind and less in the chatter and more in the primordial trust of life. And it's more easy to drop into that mystery. It's more easy to drop into the playfulness and there's that surrender. And so often a lot of women will find me when they're going through a fertility journey. So they're trying to conceive a child. And there's a TCM practitioner that I know that he knows, but just by looking at a woman, if she's dropped or not, because he can perceive the energy where it's like, have you dropped into your womb? So a lot of, if I'm supporting someone through a fertility journey, it's helping them to surrender into their womb, into feeling, coming out of the head. But when we've been in that very Western mindset of go, 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 that takes time to unravel from because it can actually be terrifying because it's that thing that we've been talking about the whole time of can I surrender and trust in the mystery? Can I let myself drop? And we've got to tend to the parts of us, the wounded parts, the terrified parts that are like, no, this is the way my life needs to be because then they've cultivated safety, uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And if I let the mystery in, I'm also letting chaos in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it takes time.
And just bringing it back to it is something you could force, but probably not recommended to push beyond.
Yeah. And this is definitely an area where I've been in spaces and I know that I was obviously in those spaces just to see what's gone out there, but I do see a lot of people force that and force the womb open. That can force that Kundalini awakenings before people are ready. It can blast people open. It can destabilize them. It can like reinforce trauma because obviously if someone's experienced sexual abuse, like it's a very tender, very vulnerable area that for, you know, definitely in my journey, like if it's constantly been entered or harvested or misused with no respect, then those boundaries of trust need to be rebuilt of like, am I ready for this? Does this feel right? So this was where when I started doing the womb work in my early 30s, that's when I also started to be really become aware of the gentleness and the sweetness and the joy because people, we all can heal through joy. And I've actually seen people go through greater shifts after a giggle fit and then dropping in and then starting to cry at the same time. And I'm like, yeah, we got in there because it was like more of a subtle soaking in and they're feeling really soft and tender. And then it's like, oh, okay, now I can let these really tender parts of me move and be held.
I really like that you mentioned the authentic energy piece because I'm actually I'm working with Ken at the moment.
So amazing.
This is a huge thing in my world right now. Yeah. And so I've noticed when going through the clearing of the different energy centers.
Yep.
The second center that we're talking about relating to the womb here. I can feel like all of them.
Yep.
This one is the most difficult for me to connect with.
Yeah.
And it just feels like it doesn't matter how much it's clear. There's always so much more to come.
Uh-huh.
It is vastly different to the rest of them.
Definitely. And I find with most people I work with, and that was my experience as well, is that the second center is pretty sticky. Like we can be carrying a lot of other people's energy and a lot of stuff there. And when that starts clearing, it shifts our identity vastly. which is why then the gentleness and really stabilizing that first energy center, like, am I grounded? Do I have a good relationship with my body? Do I have like a living relationship with the earth where I feel her as a loving consciousness that when I'm falling apart, I can call on her to hold me? And that's one of the things that Ken was key with me establishing that connection with earth and connection with my body and the authenticity piece, like the tools that he just the check-ins of is this authentic? Is this mine? And that was something that I'd done a lot. Like I think everyone that teaches Reiki obviously teaches it differently, but because of my lived experience, I would often attract women and men that struggled with boundaries, struggle with managing energy, and we're just overloaded with other people's energy. And when we're in that space, it's really hard to connect in with ourselves.
Yeah.
And so it is that process of just moving through the energy field and going goodbye, sending you home. Okay, this one's really sticky. Oh God, I've got to take this to therapy and work on my mother wound or my father wound, because it always goes back to the mom and dad stuff, doesn't it? And it just takes time. We can definitely have incredible quick breakthroughs. I'm not saying that, but that actually creating the lasting change where we feel the courage to start being our authentic self, because it's one thing to be going, yeah, I want to be authentic. And then there's living that. And I'm really finding that over the last couple of years. I'm like, it is terrifying being authentic in this world.
Mm-hmm. And even as this is more new for me, this work in particular, more of a focus on this work, I'm feeling myself like looking back at my lived experience up until now and just curiously exploring how much of me was actually in that experience.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been a lot of me in my experience.
Yeah.
Even just relating on like a lot of the interactions that I've had in my life. And I'm thinking, was I even there or was I just that like turning myself into like a mirror?
Yeah.
Like that people pleasing that you mentioned.
Yeah.
How many interactions have I had where I'm present, where I'm just, it's mind blowing. And I feel like I'm in a space where it feels very rocky at the moment and it's beautiful, but it is that like kind of tearing apart is the weird visual that I'm getting, tearing apart of everything that I thought I was. And I have no idea like what's underneath or what's going to emerge.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I know that. And I'm still going through it to a point. I went through, I think it was the start, it was actually quite recently where I just had this moment where part of my soul essence dropped into my body more.
Yeah.
But it was such like a big weighted drop where I'm like, oh, I'm like here, this is me. And then this grief came up where exactly that. I looked back and was like, oh my God, so much of my life, I haven't been there for it. And I've had to go through the grieving of that because it's huge.
Yes.
And we're probably the first ones in our lineages that have had the capacity and the resource to do this work. So it's hugely healing and confronting for the lineage when there's been all of these patterns passed on. Where I had a dream the other night actually because I was doing some constellation work. So I love family constellation work. And a dear friend of mine, Dean Benson, does sessions. And we were doing a session the next day, and there was a dream that I had the night before where my grandmother was like forcing this jumper on me, where she's like, you've got to wear this jumper, you've got to wear this jumper. And the dream was like, it's itchy, I don't want to wear this jumper. And then in the constellation, what we were working on was family addiction. And the family addiction really came in through my grandmother's lineage because of war and lots of different things. But it was this visceral thing for my subconscious of, you've literally borrowed this thing from your lineage, which we all do. It's like we come in and put on these outfits and it's like, this is what we wear in this family and this is what we do here. And so again, it is like they're taking off the jumper and taking off the layers, and what's underneath is this raw, naked baby that's like, what the?
Yeah. One of my teachers often refers to that process of like becoming a skinless grape. Yeah. And you're just like, it's so vulnerable.
It is. It's so raw. It is.
I really appreciate you bringing lineage into this so much. How does one begin to start connecting to lineage in a way, especially if they don't have lived experience, like they're not surrounded by those people?
And I think particularly, I mean, I've grown up in Australia. I was born in Australia. Australia lacks a lot of culture for many different reasons and is a melting pot of many, many different cultures, including our beautiful Indigenous of this land. But for me, you know, aside from things like Christmas and birthdays, there wasn't a lot of rituals that were honouring of ancestry. One of the programs that I run is one of my teachers' programs, the Wheel of Celebration, and we move through the Wheel of the Year, the seasonal Wheel of the Year. So we celebrate the equinoxes, the solstices, and things like Beltane and Lunasa. And for me, honoring the seasonal gateway started to unlock an ancestral remembrance of what my people would have done before the church came in, and how they would have honored the seasons and the cycles and been in relationship to the land. So one of the things that I did was got my DNA checked. And I know that there's there is room for error with this. And I know some people are funny about it, but for me, it validated what I already knew. My mum went through a stage, actually, when I was doing a lot of work with my teacher, Sharon, mum just got like possessed by wanting to do all this lineage research, and bless her, she did all of that hard laboring work of like ancestry is a brilliant site. We're starting to connect the dots and get information. So she was able to put through into that the information that her mother had told her, and then connected with other family trees of other people that have obviously all pulled it together as well. Mm-hmm. So someone in your lineage might have already done the work. Mm-hmm. And for me, most of my lineage is from Ireland, Scotland, the UK, and parts of Norway. I had done quite a lot of shamanic journeying work connecting with my lineages, and that's where I'd felt things coming in from as well. That's been even a resonance with the plants that I'm drawn to. Like I love rosemary and the trees, but more of like the English trees, like the oak and hawthorn. Like they're just something in me became alive, and I was like, no, this is coming alive because I've had ancestors that have worked with these plants and been surrounded by this type of nature for eons, because up until I think for my lineage 5 generations ago, they just wouldn't have left Ireland and Scotland. Like they would have stayed there and only been forced off that land due to famine and all of the things that obviously happened in those cultures of why people then had to move. So definitely getting your DNA checked. In meditation, calling in your ancestors, like letting them know, I want to know who I am. I want to know who you are, and just setting that intention, letting it go. It can be just as simple as making like an offering space in your home for your ancestors where you light a candle, particularly on Samhain, so Halloween time, because their veils are quite thin at that time. And so in Southern Hemisphere, that's the start of May. Halloween is that time, whereas in Northern Hemisphere, that's Beltane. Mm-hmm. And then for us in November, October, when the rest of the world is celebrating Halloween, that's our fertility time. That's so it's just so interesting when we're in the Southern Hemisphere of how much things can get schismed, because we're honouring all of these Northern Hemisphere traditions. So that's something to be aware of. But lighting a candle on those points of the Wheel of the Year, because our ancestors used to come together and gather around fires and set prayers for our entire lineage. So we've had ancestors that have prayed for us. And so when we gather around fire or a candle, we can come into that space of no time and connect in with the other world and the mystery. And you feel them with practice. And then obviously being held in ceremonial space with someone that can hold that and call in the right types of energy that can really blossom in that way. And I often will also ask my ancestors to visit me in my dreams. And then what's happened is you can have like an ancestral remembrance by watching a movie, by reading a book, by going and visiting the lands. So much can start to unlock from that DNA. I remember watching Outlander and just like bawling and being like, why am I crying? Like there's nothing in this that I should be crying about. It wasn't relevant to the storyline, but it was this ancestral remembrance. Like my body was just like, we know this. We live this.
That is so hilarious. I was literally just, as soon as you said movies, I was like, Outlander.
Yeah.
100%. And like just seeing the land, and I was like, I need to be there.
Yeah.
I need to be among that nature. I've also done, or put together like a lot of my lineage on Ancestry.com. So same with you, my mom's side of the family, very much Ireland and Scotland. And then my dad's side is more Greece and the Mediterranean.
My God, I love Greece. Yeah.
And a few years ago, my partner who's Turkish, we were in Turkey and there's this particular spot along the Mediterranean, it's called Kaş. And we just fell in love with it there, like just head over heels in love. A year or so later, I came back and my brother and I started putting together a lot of the tree on Ancestry.com. Yep. And like you said, so many other people came in and we were like, yeah, we'll just steal that information. Thank you for doing that research. Yep. Bring that in. And I saw that one of the islands that I believe it was my great-great-grandmother, one of those islands was actually right next to Kaş where we were, that place in Turkey that I just felt so at home at. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is insane.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And I think this is where the travel piece can be really good for people as well. And I mean, definitely exploring blood lineage is 100% important. Mm-hmm. I also know and believe that we have soul lineages. So if we've had other lifetimes we might have spent in a like one place on the earth, like a lot of time. So I know for me, Greece is actually one of those places because I've had strong remembrances where I'm like, I've got no blood lineages that run through there that I'm aware of, but I know that to be home. Like I can feel it. And my teacher, Sharon Bolt's really passionate about bringing people into lineage alignment and bringing them into blood lineage alignment, but also mythological lineage alignment, soul lineage alignment, galactic heritage alignment. And again, that takes time because there's this unraveling, but that was why my ancestors came in and they're like, you can't keep teaching Reiki anymore. We're done with that. Because once that lineage alignment starts to really click in, there's these streams of creativity and gifts that want to be acknowledged and shared. And there is a process, and I think this is important for anyone that starts moving through, particularly even their blood lineage ancestry, is it's going to kick up trauma at some point. So when we're reconnecting to the gifts, we have to reconnect to their pain. And then there's a transmutation process where often we might have been contracted to be the ancestor that's like, I'll transmute that for the lineage. I'll clear that for the lineage. And so Sharon and I laugh about it sometimes. It's we're like a fancy cleanup crew.
Do you have any thoughts on, because that's something that we hear a lot from different, you know, teachers, writers, whatever they might be, that there are those of us here to really transmute what has been running through our lineage. Do you think that it's more current at this time? And why do you think that's so?
My perspective of this is that the consciousness on the planet is shifting so much at the moment. There's like there's more opportunity. That light is blinding sometimes. Like I've noticed even from when I've started to do the work until now, like it used to take me a while to get to the root of a pattern, whereas I can be like buttering my toast in the morning and then I'm like, oh my God, I just like had this epiphany of all of this stuff and saw all this stuff. And it shifts in an instant. So with that, though, this is why there's a lot of people at the moment that are really destabilized. They're struggling because particularly off the back of everything that's happened over the last couple of years, so much of people's trauma is really popping because there is like this incredible cleansing process that's taking place. But that's rough and chaotic. It's like what we see happening in the environment with floods and fires, that we have that going on internally as well. So I definitely think there's an acceleration of consciousness. I also think for many of us that are privileged to live in the West and that have the resources, there's whole generations obviously coming up that have been raised with getting therapy or having parents. Like I see the women that came through and had done my Reiki training now with their kids. I'm like, there's so much magic because they're not shutting the magic down. They're not shutting the mystery down. So these kids are just absolute powerhouses and I'm excited for when they are adults of what and how they're going to change the world. There's a lot. Like there's a lot shifting and changing that's, allowing the space to do this. And so I find with a lot of people that they'll do a lot of personal work and then it just gets to a point where it's like, right, I'm ready to actually start doing the ancestral healing work as well. And this is where teachers like, I love doing that work. Ken's amazing at that work. My teacher Sharon's amazing at that work. And that's also then when coming together and healing in community can be really powerful as well, and doing group work, because we tend to can shift a lot more in a group than we do individually as well.
That's interesting. Is that, and that's because of just like the shared focused intent.
Yeah. We've got our own energy. We view it like a battery. We're each like a battery. So if all of those batteries come together and create a grid, there's just more power that can happen. And then I've also had experiences where there's just certain things that can only be healed in community, where we have to be witnessed by another. We can't just be the one that's witnessing ourselves, or there's a dynamic that plays out. It's just like, oh my God, because I had that interaction with you, I've been able to heal this thing that's been in my lineage for generations that my lineage was just incapable of doing. And look, I feel like when I look back on the journey, I can see all of the threads that are weaving. So I guess for anyone that's listening, that's like in the metamorphosis muck of it, or at the beginning of just questioning, who am I, like beyond who I've been conditioned to be, is give yourself the grace of time. Like, don't put pressure, because I think there is this pressure, I've got to heal and I've got to do the work. But then that can very quickly become an obsession or an addiction or a distraction to actually live. So you can do both, and cultivating joy is such a powerful thing to do, to go, what brings me alive? What lights me up? And it's okay to not know what that is. I think sometimes if we're just really honest and go, I don't know. And for me, I'm still unraveling that, because so much of my joy in my 20s was partying, getting high, dancing, which I love. So it's like, okay, well, I can still dance without getting high and drinking, but what does that look like now? Like, at the moment it's dancing around my house a lot. But there are things that we can cultivate that has been a thread. Or I think as we age and go through different initiations, our likes and our desires change, and that's okay too. So then it's a cultivation of, well, how can I challenge myself and put myself in new environments, or sign up to a new class, or go and try this thing that's kind of scary, but I'm kind of attracted to it at the same time, and just see and be in the play of it, rather than, oh, I'm going to this painting class because I'm going to be an artist now, I'm going to sell my paintings on Instagram. Maybe not. Like, but if you find it so joyful to be painting and playing with paint, then go and do that just for the sake, because it makes you happy.
When I was, so before we started recording today, and I was feeling into just this conversation and that play piece was coming up, I was just looking outside of my window, and I've got this really beautiful like vine type of situation going on. And I was just looking at how the vines begin to twist together, and they flick off in different directions, and they go over there, and then they twist backwards. And I was like, it's so playful.
Yeah.
And I just thought, if I just had the intention of witnessing play in nature, it would be everywhere.
Yeah, 100%. This is why I love working with plants and plant spirits, plant essences, tinctures, sitting with the plants in meditations, because they exactly will teach us things like that. And vine medicine's so powerful for unraveling, weaving, rethreading. Yeah.
That's so great. Okay, I'm feeling great. And I didn't have, like I said, I didn't have anything prepared. And I feel good. How are you feeling?
Yeah, good.
Good. Are you happy to close off here?
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. It feels like, as we were talking about the vine was just like, complete.
Yeah. This was such a joy. Thank you so much. And yeah, that play piece that I keep bringing up, that's not something that, like, I can only speak from personal experience. There are some, you know, interactions that I go into that I want to cultivate that play, but that safety isn't there to do so.
Yeah.
And so thank you for like allowing for that safety and bringing your own play in that has just allowed me to step into that completely.
Yeah. Because if you think about it, when we're cultivating play, we're wanting to connect in with that inner child that knows how to play. And so sometimes when I'm working with people, if they're like, play, that's so foreign to me, because their childhood might have been cut short for many different reasons. So this is where doing the inner child healing work can be the gateway to then access more authentic play.
And that was a huge piece in I was going to say what we did yesterday, but what I did yesterday, the process that you created.
Yeah.
You asked the question of like, what age is your heart at?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was just taken way back.
Yep.
Speaking of lineage, I went through it and I was like, I need to send this to my mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just knew that there was, this is not just me. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. Because most of the things that we are challenged by, there's been many people in our ancestry that have also been challenged by that thing.
Mm.
Which I think sometimes for me brings comfort, because I'm like, oh, I'm not the only one
that's
feeling all of these things or struggling with this thing. It's okay. This has been happening for generations. This is okay.
Yeah. For me, this shouldn't be there in the first place, but for me it takes away the feeling of like fault.
Yeah. 100%. Fault. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Because then we're carrying the responsibility of it in community.
Mm.
And this is, again, where that piece of community where it's like, oh, I don't have to do it alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.